Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. I am John Manuel, nominally your host for this edition of the Baseball America podcast. Matt Eddy and Ben Battler are going to take you through. Between the two of them, they did four of our league top 20 prospects, which are online at baseballamerica.com, and top 10s included in the latest issue of Baseball America with Madison Bumgarner on the cover. Just 160 scouting reports, 170 counting indie ball. We'll let J.J. Cooper have his own indie ball podcast later on this year when everything else dies down. That might be your Christmas edition of the podcast to take you through the holidays. But Matt and Ben, besides doing a lot of our top 30s by organization this offseason for the Prospect Handbook, each did a Rookie Advanced League, the Appy League for Matt, Pioneer League for Ben, and they each did a more advanced league with Ben doing the AA Southern League and Matt doing the International League. So without a little further ado, we'll get to Matt and to Ben, and we'll start off, Ben, with you just maybe talking a little bit about the difference and how different it is to do a league like the Southern League, where we have a team here locally in Carolina where you can actually go see players with your own eyes, you can meet scouts face-to-face and discuss players with them, versus doing a league over the phone like the Pioneer League, basically sight unseen.
Yeah, I think with the Southern League list, I think the Southern League probably is my favorite league to do among the two. Obviously, like John said, you know, I have the kind of a unique perspective. You know, we have a Southern League team in Carolina, which is now no longer a Marlins affiliate, looking like it's about to be an affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds now, so it's something to look forward to next year. But, you know, with that league, it affords me the opportunity to go and see these players, not just for myself, but, you know, mostly just to talk to the scouts and managers, hitting coaches, pitching coaches there. So it allows you just to get a better feel for the players versus, you know, trying to evaluate some of the players playing the Pioneer League. Crazy offensive environment, probably second only to the Cal League, playing over in Wyoming in a league where mostly guys who are just drafted or young guys who can't even be traded for yet, so teams mostly don't even scout that area. So the teams figure, all right, we'll just get them in instructs, or we'll get them next year in a full season league, we can actually trade for them. But I was still able to talk to some scouts up there and talk to the managers. And, you know, that's basically how we put together the list, our top 20 prospects list for the league by league list, is just going to, you know, starting off, we know what they did this year, and we cover them throughout the year. But, you know, when we try to break it down for the league top 20, we try to talk to the managers, we talk to all the hitting coaches and the pitching coaches, if we can do that, try to break down their own players as well as, you know, the other prospects who they've seen around the league, and from there, maybe talk to a farm director or two if we need a little bit more information, and then the bulk of it comes too from talking to the scouts who, you know, are seeing these guys either year round or in the second half of the year once they're done with their area coverage from scouting amateur players. So we try to get as many opinions as possible. And then weigh that with their performance record, not just from this year, but from previous seasons, just to get the best gauge of their current true talent and their projected future true talent in the big leagues, which is the most important. And just trying to tie that all together. I know, obviously, Matt, you did the Triple A list for the International League and for the Appy League too, as well. I don't know if you agree or not that maybe a full season league is more enjoyable versus maybe one of a smaller league like the Appy League. That's a little more of an interesting twist to it for you.
For me, the short season leagues have always been a little more interesting for me because you get the fewer teams. You know, you're evaluating fewer players. There's less anguish in leaving players off the list because you can fit more people on. And I was fortunate in being able to see a lot of both of these leagues have a lot of teams based in North Carolina. I was able to see a number of the players firsthand and talk with people who also had seen them firsthand. Let's talk specifically about some of the decisions you had to make in the Pioneer League. What was the most difficult ranking decision you had to make for this group?
Well, I think in the Pioneer League, and I mentioned in the write-up, it's kind of a tweener league. You know, the Rockies don't have a GCL or an AZL team. So, you know, they send, they're like, a William Rosario, number one prospect. He played in the league last year, and he didn't even make the list. And everyone I talked to just raved about the strides that he made defensively, but mostly offensively, at the plate. The strides that he made were just astounding. Because he's not a guy who has a chance to get his feet wet in the AZL. He's getting sent right to that league, having to deal with a largely American-born pitching staff. So it creates a lot of a lot of tough decisions, or I shouldn't say a lot of disparity in the ability of players in that league as opposed to a true short season league like the Northwest or the New York Penn League. But for me, I think that Kyle Russell was only a fourth rounder by the Cardinals, and then this June he went one round higher, got $410,000. For me to rank him, he was a tough guy to rank, because if you're a college player, obviously the power is there, and there's still the questions about his swing. He's a long arm guy, and he performed, but when you're talking about Pioneer League performance, and the offensive environment there is just so high, it's tough to get a good gauge, and especially in a very limited sample of a performance record to go on. I think that's what gets lost, I think, a lot of times is, you look at the stats and, this guy hit, 390 and on base of 450 and he slugged 600. Well, it's 134 at-bats. You wouldn't go pronouncing Alex Cora can go off and do that in a span of 134 at-bats, and you're not going to go off, pronouncing him as one of the best players in the big leagues. A lot of variance and a lot of goofy stuff basically can happen in that time span. I'm not trying to discredit anyone for having a good year, but our goal really is to ultimately find who are going to be the best major leaguers. And Russell is just a tricky guy because, he was one of the higher draft picks in that league, but, you're striking out a third of the time. I don't mind some strikeouts if you're a power hitter, but the ability to – you have to be able to put the ball in play enough to be able to have a reasonable on-base percentage in the big leagues. Otherwise, it's just gonna kill that. DeVaris Gordon was a guy who was drafted one round after him, and he was another draft pick by the Dodgers. But he's a unique situation because he was a JUCO kid who didn't qualify academically for his junior college. Yet he was tremendous athlete. Everyone I talked to really, really liked him. And he's just bone skinny. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that as a positive thing because he's just going to fill out naturally and gain more strength. He's already got a good feel for putting the ball in play. Obviously, his dad is Tom Gordon, the Phillies right-hander, so the good bloodline's there. But, I think Russell was one of the more tricky guys to rank. And then really right at Russell was 10, really right after him. And that whole 11 to... Geez, I don't know, 30 range even. A lot of guys are kind of, fungible type among each other. There's guys who are in the 20 to 30 range who may end up being better than the guys in the 11 to 19 or 11 to 20 range, as it may be. Not a lot separating those guys. You don't get a lot of, if you look at the GCL or the AZL list, you're not going to get a lot of guys who are, eighth round picks like an Eric Komatsu was in the Pioneer League list, but...
An eighth-round pick out of college.
Right, an eighth-round pick out of college. Exactly, I should say that. So it's kind of a tricky league to do. I don't know if there was, for you in the Appy League, if there was any kind of... we do a split decision when we did the top 100 list this year. I don't know if there was any internal split decision with you in terms of just a guy who you kind of have some mixed feelings about or maybe some variability on whether he, either is just a flame-out guy or maybe a guy with a high ceiling, kind of a high-risk, high-reward guy, or anyone else you might have just found interesting on that list.
Yeah, the toughest player to evaluate in the top 10 by far was Angel Morales, the Twins center fielder, who was a third-round pick in 07 out of the Puerto Rico Academy. The difficult thing being, power is tremendous, but like Kyle Russell, 3 years younger, he doesn't put the bat on the ball too much. He's struck out in 40% of his at-bats, which is rather high. It's higher than Cody Johnson, for example, who finished second in the minors in overall strikeouts. So a player like that, who's got tremendous power, and he has good range in center field, he runs okay. A player like that, you wonder if the more advanced pitchers are going to be able to really exploit the holes in his swing. So for him, I put him 8, and a lot of people judging from the chat thought that was a little low, because the guy did hit what he hit. 15 home runs? Yeah, 15 home runs in 68 games, a 68-game schedule. So I mean, the power's there. He's definitely interesting and a player to watch. The most controversial was definitely the number one spot between the two top candidates, being Tim Beckham, the shortstop for the Rays, who was taken first overall in June, and Wilmer Flores, the Mets' 2007 sign out of Venezuela. The Flores, hitting wise, you know, hit circles around Beckham, but he's not the athlete. He's not the quick twitch athlete like Beckham. He doesn't have the true up the middle profile that Beckham has, and that was the difference there. Give us your personal favorite, like kind of an off the wall favorite from your Pioneer League list.
An off the wall. I mean, the most interesting story is Michael Cohn, a right-hand reliever from the Angels, a guy who was a position player at school in college, a 4-year senior guy. Usually that guy's not going to make the list. Only threw 13 innings in college, 13 innings or so, but he's 90-95 off the mound. You know, he had a little shoulder tenderness, but you know, the Angels saw him pitch well, and it's just a good job of scouting to get a, you know, really later round pick like that. Give him a little bit of money, and you know, he's out there throwing 90-95 out of the bullpen. So to me, he's one of the more interesting guys. Another kind of guy who I rolled the dice on. You know, didn't have a great year, but then again, you know, another catcher in that league last year didn't have a great year, Willian Rosario. But rolled the dice a little bit on Rosmel Perez. He was a guy who I believe signed for $150,000 a couple of years ago with the Diamondbacks. A guy with an excellent feel for the strike zone. They've had success in Venezuela in particular with the Diamondbacks signing guys like Gerardo Parra, Carlos Gonzalez, you know, a couple of other guys with pretty good feel for hitting and guys who are maturing. You know, Parra slowed down a little bit on the Southern League this year and actually didn't end up making my list, but he was one of the close cuts for that list. But Perez is a guy with good defensive ability. I think he's probably the best catcher in that system, perhaps, in the Diamondback system. But now I just have a, you know, maybe he doesn't end up developing the strength to drive the ball and punish pitchers when they put the ball in the zone. We'll have to see how that plays out. But I think he's one of the guys definitely worth following as I don't like using the word breakout candidate, but, you know, he's a guy who can make some pretty good strides and develop next year and you know, really put himself a little bit more on more people's radar, you know, once his strength comes around and he starts to be able to drive the ball with a little more authority.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the higher levels, the Southern League in particular. You know, it's right up there for me, and I'm sure you feel the same way. It's right up there with the Eastern League in terms of being among the deepest in the minors. Let's start with the most difficult ranking decision for you. Which gave you the most? Which kept you up nights?
I think they all did. I was, you know, I was four. I don't know. I can't even. I don't have it all written down. How many games I went to? Probably somewhere between, I don't know, 30 and 50 games this year in the Southern League. So I was fortunate to be able to do that. Saw probably, just looking at the list right now, saw almost everyone. I saw Price in AAA, so I didn't see him in AA, but I saw just about every player on this list that I ranked players for, except for Jeremy Hellickson. I think he's the one player, and Tommy Hansen. Those are probably the two guys on this list who I did not see play. But got good reviews on, put up, you know, obviously the excellent numbers this year. In terms of ranking guys, I think just kind of sorting out some of the pitchers, you know, you start at the top with Clayton Kershaw and David Price. I mean, those guys, 1-2 for me in the whole league. The only separator for me, Kershaw a little bit younger, already having the success in the big leagues. Price did miss a little bit of time earlier in the season. Obviously, everyone's just going to forget about that. But I don't think health is a big concern going forward for him. But, you know, he does throw the slider. It was an elbow injury. They're obviously not going to say it's a serious thing or anything like that. He is still back to throwing mid-90s fastballs. But it is any time a guy has an elbow or a shoulder injury, for me, it is a concern. You know, he did rank number 2. I really do like him, so we just present the strengths and the weaknesses, so I do really like him a lot. Beyond that, you know, then you have Chris Volstead, a guy who I was able to see pitch several times this year. I think if you're going to be myopic and just look at the a strikeout rate or something like that, you're kind of missing the picture. This guy has above average stuff across the board. He has he's not going to strike guys out because he has a lethal sinker that he comes way downhill from his 6'8" frame. And then if he wants to finish you off with a strikeout, if he doesn't get the ground ball out early in the count, he's going to finish you off. He's got a plus changeup. He's got a plus curveball, which is actually his number two pitch. So he was a guy who I decided to rank ahead of guys like Tommy Hansen, Wade Davis, James McDonald, another guy I really like, Jeremy Hellickson, some good arms in that league. You know, there's some good arms, too, who didn't make the list. You know, like you said, it really was, in my opinion, it was a little bit deeper than the Eastern League. Obviously, the Eastern League is pretty deep with talent, especially when you got, you know, a guy like Pablo Sandoval kind of rounding out the end of the list, you know, a personal favorite of mine. So those are some of the difficult decisions for me. You know, Matt, doing the international, you get to see some of the players as well yourself. You know, kind of a... I would say it's less deep than the Southern League, and I think I'm being generous by saying that.
Yes. Unfortunately, with the way the league being 14 teams big, the league has gone to a schedule where they face mostly division opponents, so we did not get to see a lot outside of the Southern Division. And you are correct. If you scan the 11 to 20 of the IL list, it doesn't hold a candle to those AA leagues. As much as I like Brett Gardner and Chris Getz for their ability to get the most out of what they have, you know, they don't really stack up with the second tier prospects in other leagues.
And was there you know, when you look at the, at least looking at the top 10 guys in that list, I mean, there's definitely some pretty electric talent there, guys like Jay Bruce and McCutchen, and obviously Bruce is no longer a prospect, but when we do our league, so he won't be in our top 100 prospects list when the season ends and the 2009 prospect handbook comes out. But he was eligible for the International League list just because of the playing time that he accrued there. But, you know, it seems like there's some pretty good guys with Bruce and McCutchen and Span. It seems like there's some pretty good talent there, especially in the outfield. And we're starting to see that, especially with Span now, you know, exceeding a lot of people's expectations. And you know, that game for the Twins last night was pretty awesome to watch. You know, how would you say how some of these guys, especially the outfielder, would you expect them to come along?
Yeah, this Denard Span, the Twins first rounder in 02, is definitely the biggest breakout candidate this side of Charlie Morton, and also one of the best players in the league. You know, you could argue I didn't give him enough credit here. I ranked him 8 behind a guy, Neil Walker, who did not perform, but who is 2 years younger. You could argue that way. But Denard Span, you know, he always had the good batting eye, but this year, you know, just, you know, he's always been a quick-twitch athlete who could manage the strike zone, but this year he just put it together with the bat. You know, the power started to blossom, more in the doubles and triples, not really in driving the ball over the wall. But, you know, and he's got that plus-plus range, good arm. He's played mostly right field for the Twins. He shows off that arm as much as he can. So for me, he was the guy. The other guy, David Huff, the left-hander for the Indians. This guy, if anybody on this list, I'd feel comfortable being a quality number three starter in the major leagues. It's David Huff. You know, 4 pitches for strikes, commands them all pretty well. You know, and they really tightened up the sharpness on both of his breaking balls, which has really made him much more deadly against lefties. Something you can knock him for in the past, and he's got that fastball changeup combination for the right-handed batters. He's one to watch, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And then you know, Span, obviously a very exciting player. I think that brings us to one of our emails today from Joe in Maryland. He says, "Kudos on the great tools edition of the recent Baseball America edition. In keeping with that theme, and just for fun, I was curious who you would select in some of these categories without regard to classification." Nanny Knight's, or I should say, notes the best hitting prospect in all of the minors, best power, most exciting player. And that starts with, that kind of goes back to our best tools issue, which kind of starts, kind of kicks off our league top 20s. I mean, we obviously follow the minor league prospects all season long and during the off season as well. But, you know, what happens is we start by doing the best tools list. We send out a survey to all the managers in the league, cross-check it with some scouts for some, you know, some tiebreakers or some second opinions. But those are mostly decided by the managers within the league. The most exciting player in the Southern League was Alcides Escobar, and I completely agree with that. I would say he's probably the most exciting player in the minor leagues to watch. He's just a phenomenal defender at shortstop. If he was in the big leagues right now, which he is in the big leagues right now, but if he was in the big leagues all year, let's say, I have no doubt that he'd be an above at one of the top, probably in my opinion, five big league defensive shortstops. He really is that phenomenal. He could win. I mean, he's got some stiff competition with Troy Tulowitzki in the National League, but he's a guy who should win Gold Gloves, multiple Gold Gloves. Tremendous range, outstanding footwork, a plus-plus arm, hands work well, range to both sides, line drives, ground balls, cleans up everything. He's got Matt Gamble to his right, so maybe he gets a few more balls in the hole there, but you know, everything he does defensively is just outstanding to watch. He runs well. He does the little things well, bunts, steal bases. But even more so than that, he's a 21-year-old who hit over 300. You know, not a lot of power, not a lot of walks, but he hits all types of pitches, and that's the thing with him. You know, maybe he won't walk, you know, 100 times a year. He's never going to do that. But he'll put the ball in play frequently enough because of his ability to – he still does recognize pitches fairly well and puts the bat to the ball, no matter if it's fastball, slider, changeup, breaking ball, whatever it is. You know, he'll put the ball in play. He'll get on base that way. He has gained a little bit of strength from the season before, so he does have the ability to punish pitchers when they do attack him in the zone. You know, all around for me, that makes him, for me, the most exciting player that I watched this year and probably the most exciting player in all of the minor leagues.
What do you think for best hitter?
I mean, best hitter, it's tough because there's so many guys who, you know, I don't know if maybe necessarily best hitter is this guy because of how frequently he strikes out, if we're just talking about, you know, the pure hit tool, but just a great swing, Travis Snyder. It's hard to come away not liking stuff that he does at the plate, with his ability to just hit. I mean, he's not gonna be any great shakes in the field, but you know, we can see already what he's doing in the big leagues as a hitter.
20-year-old hitter,
one of the youngest guys in the big leagues right now. It's really phenomenal to see what he's doing. I don't think anyone's surprised that he's going to be a very good hitter too in the future, given what he's done obviously for the Blue Jays in the low minors as well. But I mean, he's just an outstanding hitter.
Yeah, he was going to actually be my pick for most exciting player, but kind of a different visual than you would expect. You know, you're expecting the up the middle guy who runs and plays defense, but I mean, the ability to hit for average and power is pretty rare, and he's got that.
Mm-hmm. And for power, for me, I mean, I don't know. That's tough because there's a lot of guys who have a lot of power and then also strike out a lot and don't really put the ball in play. And it's a lot of raw power, but maybe not game power. One guy for me who does stand out, though, and let's see, it's still September, so he's still 18, is Mike Stanton, the center fielder slash corner outfielder for the Marlins that they had in Greensboro. Ranked in the South Atlantic League list, he was the number three prospect in that list. His power and the Greensboro ballpark, the ball carries really well there, but his numbers this year were unbelievable. He's 6'5", huge frame, athletic ability. This guy hit the ball. I was at the South Atlantic League All-Star game where he was in the Home Run Derby, even though he wasn't a South Atlantic League All-Star. I guess it was just because of his home park, but he was hitting balls further than anyone. I mean, maybe Michael Burgess was there. Maybe he had a, you know, comparable power. Hayward was there too, and Montero. Those guys have some pretty serious power. It was just a phenomenal league that year, but this year I should say. But Mike Stanton, already 18 with at least plus-plus power, and he's just going to grow into more power in the future as he continues to fill out and mature. What he can do at the plate, you know, obviously he strikes out a lot. I'm not as concerned about that with him versus a guy like, you know, Kyle Russell, perhaps, because of Stanton's youth, his athleticism. He also doesn't strike out quite as frequently as Russell, but just the things he can do at the plate is just really outstanding. And for me, his power is truly, truly prodigious.
You know, it's funny. You could nominate Orioles catcher Matt Wieters for all three of these categories.
Yeah.
And still present a pretty legitimate case as most exciting, best hitter, and best power. And what if he didn't have to catch every day? You know, maybe those tools, those hitting tools, would be even more manifested than they are.
Mm-hmm. I think that with Wieters, what's incredible is that, you know, if let's say Wieters can't catch anymore for whatever reason, and he has to move to first base, he's still one of the top 20, 25 prospects in baseball. For me, I mean, it's his offensive skill set is phenomenal, and then when you just add the above average defense to that, I mean, I don't even think it was really close in our minor league player of the year discussion. Who to give it to? We could talk all day about all the good things that Matt Wieters does, but you're right. He's definitely exciting offensively and defensively, and really one of the best of a great minor league catching crop right now.
Well, all right. I think we've run out of things to talk about here. I mean, unless you had more to talk about in the Pioneer League.
I think we wrapped up the Pioneer League in the list in the chat. You know, we're doing the High A leagues right now. Already got the California and the Carolina League out of the way, so we'll be getting the FSL list up and then move up to Double A and Triple A. You know, I think the Double A lists are for me the most interesting to see because that's where most of the talent is. You know, guys who are going to be ready to make the leap to the big leagues next year. If you're interested in what rookies might impact your own favorite team next year in 2009. If you look at the Double A list, guys who are on the top, or even the back end guys who just had good years. I know from doing the Southern League list, kind of rolled the dice a little bit on the back of the list. Maybe not in the classic way that you think of rolling the dice on a five tool guy or a raw toolsy guy. I'm kind of a sucker for a guy with a good swing and a outstanding feel for the strike zone. That's what Michael Brantley has. That's what Luis Valbuena has. You know, so these guys were able to get onto my list. I see them. You know, if Brantley ever develops some power and some better instincts in center field, he could be an outstanding player. There's obviously some risk there because maybe that never happens. Maybe he just flames out and, is only a serviceable bench player or something like that. And the same with Valbuena. But, those are two guys who, there's some harder throwers in the league, guys like Pareda, Ryan Tucker, other guys like Chris Valleca and Gerardo Parra, guys with good feel for hitting, guys maybe who don't jump out at you with the tools, although obviously Parra has a plus-plus arm. But guys who didn't make the list, who I still think are going to be good big leaguers. You know, we cut the list off at 20, but I think it's important to remember that, you know, we could cut it off at, 23. I think that would just be odd for some people to see that. You know, it's not just these are the 20 good players in the league and everyone else is not worth thinking about. That's why we go 30 deep in each organization when we do our prospect handbook. And even then, sometimes it's sometimes not even enough to get all the guys in there. So just because guys not in the top 20 prospects list, especially in a deep league like one of these Double-A leagues, doesn't mean we don't like them or anything like that. It's just a tough league. It's just tough to get everyone on there and to really wrap up the list. So. There's a lot of guys, basically, it was just what I'm trying to say, is guys who don't make the list who we still like and could be, average, above average, even all-stars down the line. But sometimes it's just a matter of stacking them up against all the talent within the league itself.
Yeah, and the other great thing about Double-A is you get more prospects to qualify for these lists, which requires one plate appearance per league game. Like if these guys get bumped to Triple A for the final month of the year, they often don't qualify in the Triple A leagues, mm-hmm. but they almost always do in Double A. And the other great thing is there are three Double A leagues, so you get to spread it around further than you do at at low A and triple A in particular. I think we're done singing the praises of the double A level. For Ben Badler, I'm Matt Eddy, and thank you for listening.